You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Regardless of what you may think initially, you have never heard this broadcast before on the Hour of the Time. Pay very, very close attention. You can hear part one tonight, part two tomorrow. And on Thursday night, I'll tell you where to get it. And make sure that you do get it. It's important. You must see the video from which the audio of tonight and tomorrow night's broadcast is taken.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Behind, something's not right.
Throw out your arms.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. Did you got a complaint? Pay us a tax.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You can obey if you want to come home.
Don't seduce her
and do what you're told.
Speaking of the Gestapo folks, they've been up here for the last 3 weeks. They were up here yesterday. They were up here yesterday and today in their little white Fedmobile and their little red Fedmobile. So if anything happens to me, remember, I was murdered.
Pike said Lucifer is God across this land. And Clinton saying take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of the fourth right, Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rapes the nation. Crisis creation. In sight, black and white, program agitation.
Don't resist! You're surrounded! By the UN in white and brown, the ATF, the men in black, of the One World Order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilation. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get him. They came here with the OSS through Operation Paperclip. National ID, debit card? Yeah. Vaccination biochip, milk carton kit, genetic engineering. Clinton says her health plans for you and your own good. Sure. And Adolf Hitler's Robin Hood.
Order.
Masonic mind manipulation. Inciting riots is crisis creation.
Order.
Biochip implantation. Vaccinate your kid for UN identification.
This is a test for all of us. So I have today just one simple request. A comprehensive package of health care benefits that are always there and can never be taken away. Never be taken away.
Atmospheric, social illusion, media hype, plan confusion,
Masonic religion, it's a liar, got you praying for a Luciferian Messiah.
Illuminati thinks that they're enlightened, that they're to be the gods of Earth, born of incest from the sons of Satan and their sisters in satanic birth. Hidden agenda, Kissinger, Nixon, Ford, and Bill. While your kids out back smoking crack for some cheap thrill. They've numbed us down and dumbed us down with fluoride TV drugs, the NEA, and public schools. They've taken your brightest and our best and made them public fools. With managed media, brain-bending lies and filth, the banksters stole your wealth. Johnson, Bush, Carter, Reagan, Gore, and Dan, they've all been pushing pipes, but five master plan. Rhodes Scholar Oration. Clinton speaks, then rapes the nation.
Hello, I'm Dr. Frederick Whitehurst. I was employed by the FBI for 16 years as an agent, the last 12 of those years at the FBI Crime Laboratory in Washington, D.C. After reviewing the results of a six-year investigation into the tragedy at Waco, Texas, I am convinced that the American people have never been told the full truth about that matter.
Waco.
Having served with the FBI's hostage negotiation team during this crisis, April the 19th would mark the end of one of my duties and the beginning of another.
A new revelation.
Unknown to me, my life was about to change forever as I would come to know what failure is.
Today I saw the gates of hell. I saw the gates of hell.
Holding a child in your hands that lost its life in a fire where the temperatures reached in excess of 3,000 degrees is something that pierced my heart.
April 19th, turned the TV on and now saw the tanks ramming into the front of the building and the fire shooting out, and it was horrifying.
Mommy says, you know, they told us about the fire. He says, they said, my daddy and my brothers and my sisters are gone.
Things will be set straight. People will know the truth of things.
Today, two subcommittees undertake historic joint hearings on executive branch conduct during that led up to the events at Waco, Texas in 1993. In human terms, these hearings are about a tragic loss of life. Four brave young law enforcement officers lost their lives on February 28, 1993. A planned raid went badly and off course. These four agents, dedicated and proud, deserve our full respect. They did not choose to die, but like many others in law enforcement community, they chose to serve. But this is a complex event. On April 19, 1993, after a 51-day siege, Other decisions led to the use of so-called CS gas, and a fire broke out. The fire rapidly consumed the entire Davidian compound, killing all 22 innocent children and more than 60 adults. The truth behind that part of the tragedy is also important and is the obligation of those who have responsibility for oversight to pursue the truth relentlessly.
The Branch Davidians were a Seventh-day Adventist, or a sect of Seventh-day Adventists. They were an offshoot, developed first in California under the leadership of Victor Hadaf. He moved to Waco in 1934-35, founded a community called Mount Carmel. His followers, in turn, moved to the location we know in the early 60s. If you once get to know these people, they're different from you and me. They're more religious than you and me. They know the Bible better than you and me. They lived apart from the rest of us. They lived in a manner different than the rest of us. They had different marriage customs and different property practices than the rest of us have. And they had a religion that was absolutely incomprehensible to most Christians.
Well, there were people from all walks of life, various nations, and a lot of them came from England. They were colored people as well as white people.
The majority of those people in there were not criminals in the sense of the word that we think about them. They were truly believing people. I believe 99% of those people, their sole purpose was the attainment of eternal life, which is, after all, what I believe all of us, that, you know, at least that are Christians, and believe in.
The Branch Davidians believe, first of all, that as the remnants of the true faith, they would be attacked by a hostile army representing an apostate government, Babylon, they called it, and that it was their religious duty to defend the faith.
In 1992, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms began an investigation into David Koresh for the possession of illegal firearms. They formed a dynamic entry plan to secure the premises and seize illegal weapons with approximately 100 federal agents and 3 helicopters, which would ultimately cost the lives of 4 ATF agents and 6 Branch Davidians.
On February 28, 1993, at approximately 9:40 a.m., ATF agents, while attempting to execute a warrant, were met with heavy gunfire by a group of individuals occupying a compound approximately 10 miles northeast of Waco, Texas. The group is identified as the Branch Davidians.
Gunfight broke out that would become the longest shootout in American law enforcement history.
According to the ATF, their men pull up to Mount Carmel, piled out of their cattle trailers, went running towards the door, guns pointed, shouting, "Police, search warrant. Lay down." According to them, David was standing at the front door unarmed, and he shut the door when they started running towards him. And the next thing the ATF knew, it says, it was receiving gunfire from inside of Mount Carmel, in particular from behind that front door.
He knew law enforcement was coming, and he was so diabolical that he laid an ambush.
David Koresh expresses this. He says in this tape that he went out on his porch. He said, "Stop, there's women and children in here." And a shot rang out and hit the door on to the right. That door, he says, kicked.
I went running down the hall and found Perry Jones laying in the hall, screaming that he'd been shot. Perry Jones was in his 60s. He was unarmed, as was David Koresh. When they went to the front door, both were shot in the area of the front door. David was shot in the wrist. Perry Jones was shot in the stomach.
And then he says, If you don't believe me, look at the videotape. I know you have that tape, he says. I saw you making it across the road.
According to the agency, there were three or four video cameras pointed at the front door to tell you everything that happened at the front door of that building that day. They claim they can't find a single one of them. Every one of those videotapes vanished.
In addition to the missing videotape, the ATF's on-scene activity logs also disappeared.
I'm sorry, sir. I guess you mentioned that notes were torn out of the surveillance log.
I was just wondering, how does that happen?
I don't know, sir. I had never heard that before.
My dad's name is Terry Jones. He was an unarmed man. And you guys just shot through the door and killed him. Thanks a lot.
Well, Ballesteros was one of the first ones to the door. Officer Ballesteros, he was an ATF agent. And they had a plan that if the dogs came up to attack them when they came to the front door, they were to shoot the dogs, to kill the dogs. And he testified at a pretrial hearing that, in fact, they did fire and shoot the dogs at that time. It didn't take much of a spark to get a war going.
I remember gun shooting through the windows. Our room was shot up completely.
I did my best at getting the kids under the bed. All of a sudden now there's, I don't know how many, 50, 70, I don't know, 100 people outside. But at some point before I got Jake and Brian under the bed, bullets came flying in my room.
We're a law enforcement agency. We don't fire through walls indiscriminately at people.
I greatly feared that they would come in, they would open that door, and even though I didn't have a gun, it wouldn't matter that they would shoot me in the face. They had already shot at me through the window, and I had no clue what was going to happen.
The government tried to say that everybody, they could put a gun in everybody's hand at the beginning and during the raid, and that's not true. Most people were unarmed. There were a few that had guns, and I admit that, and there were probably those that reacted to seeing David and Perry and others gunned down, who responded by firing back. But it was not a general ambush as they would like you to believe. I am in sympathy with the families of those that lost, the families of the four agents that died. I know what they're going through. We lost a lot of friends and a lot of our families. I lost a daughter inside Mount Carmel.
After about 2 hours, they had a real truce. It wasn't a pretty sight. I mean, there were grown men crying all around. There was a group of guys that were down on their knees and they were praying. Very disturbing, you know, type thing.
I don't think the deaths on either side were justified, as well as those wounded. Judy Snyder was shot while nursing her baby through the chest.
Get my battery, Don. Get my battery behind the bus.
Immediately following the ATF raid, the Branch Davidians were charged with murder and conspiracy to commit murder of federal agents. A year later, the jury found all the Branch Davidians not guilty of both charges. Since the initial February 28th raid, a review is before federal court to determine if the ATF used excessive force while serving the search warrant.
We've got people shot. Get the hell off of here.
I'll get off the property. That's what I'm doing, sir.
Total respect. I am, sir.
You could have arrested me any day as I jogged up and down this road. You could have arrested me going to town or going to Walmart. All this stuff you guys may want to avoid and deny. And I do not appreciate it, and never will I ever appreciate somebody coming here and pushing people around with guns. Hey, I'll meet you at the doorstep any day. You know, and somebody will get hurt. If you want to keep playing that game, I'm talking to you. Somebody's going to get hurt. Because this ain't America anymore when the ATF has that kind of power to come into anybody's home and kick doors down and things like that.
Federal agents said they are headed back to the house, so this thing is not over by a long shot, and the only way that this is going to end is for all of the people inside to die or to surrender, Brad.
I was walking out. There wasn't any room in the car. And when they saw me, they just swarmed on me.
I've got to turn that down, folks, because the BATF are using terrible obscenity as they literally beat this television cameraman within an inch of his life. They just beat him and beat him and beat him simply because he was doing his job and he was recording what was actually going on. The BATF used the most foul language I think I've ever heard, and I spent a lot of years in the Navy. And they just beat this man.
The agent. I said, no. I said, I understand them. And I was their first vet valve.
At this point, we were surrounded. At this point, we did not have a clue what the government, Babylon, in our opinion, was going to do in retaliation. But we knew it wasn't going to be fun.
On the evening of February 28th, while Mount Carmel is under siege, three Davidians not present during the gunfight try to return home to their families. Two of the men are taken into custody, but Michael Dean Schroeder is killed.
They say that they stopped them and they asked for who they were or whatever. I don't see how any of the ATF agents were close enough to ask him any questions.
Michael Schroeder's body is left in a ravine for 5 days, 300 yards from Mount Carmel. According to the ATF statements, Schroeder refused demands to surrender and raised a pistol. 11 agents fired on Schroeder. The autopsy report indicates that he had 7 bullet injuries.
Why it takes so many fatal bullet wounds to knock somebody to the ground?
According to testimony, as the ATF agents were walking away with their prisoner, leaving Mike lay there like a piece of meat, an ATF agent stated that they heard 2 more gunshots.
Norman was picked up. He told the others when he was in jail with them, he said, after I surrendered, he said, and they were taking me away, he said, I heard 2 more shots off the bat. So we believe that somebody went back and shot Mike in the head to make sure he was dead.
Schroeder's autopsy report also indicated that there were 2 entry wounds behind his right ear, only 2 inches apart. The bullets passed through this blue stocking cap. However, the stocking cap was not examined during the autopsy, nor was any forensic testing conducted before Schroeder's relatives had his body cremated.
I said, it's Mike Anderson. There were 17 of them as against him, and they were dressed up as trees. We've got a lot to answer for.
After the initial rape happened on February 28th, we got several phone calls in from the ATF that said if they saw any movement inside the building, hands in front of the windows, if people were standing in front of the windows, that they felt that it was a threatening situation and that they would shoot at.
On March the 1st, the FBI begins negotiations with the Davidians. Heavy military equipment is brought in, and a stalemate begins that will last 51 days. Several adults and children leave Mount Carmel and are transferred to ATF custody. The children are turned over to Texas Social Services.
We have 21 children that have been released to our care thus far. The youngest of those children is 5 months old, and the oldest one is a 12-year-old. The children appear to be smart and well-educated, very sharp children. They seem to have been very well cared for.
In early March, Koresh had promised to come out. But at the last minute, he believed that God had told him to stay in, to wait. During the siege, David Koresh believed that the Nahum prophecy was being fulfilled, and which we believe, spiritually speaking, that's talking about the one world order. David Koresh believed that he was going to be the one that initiates the downfall of this one or new world order, the fall of Babylon the Great, by sacrificing himself and this denomination.
The description of Nineveh in the book of Nahum, David likened to the description of this country, being old, stagnant in its ways. And the battle that takes place talks about his chariot and shield being bloodied and what's not. He likened that battle to what took place on February 28th.
To read Nahum or Habakkuk, and you're in it. You're experiencing it. It all fits together. It's all a conglomerate of different prophecies by different men at different times, talking about a world battle, a great war.
These tanks are for solely defensive purposes, and they will not be armed. We have no plans to assault the compound.
2,000 years ago, hey, who believed in Christ's doctrine? A man had to die. No one would believe what he had to say.
So is there a lesson to be learned by looking back at the history of the prophets that came contrary to what people looked for?
They killed Isaiah, they killed Hosea, they killed Zechariah. And Jesus came to say in Matthew 23 to the Jews, warns you to believe not all the prophets have spoken. So, you know, today it's all together just totally disregarded. Just another religious fanatic. It's another religious group.
Ever since the rise of television, there's been a merger of news and entertainment. Monster stories and fairy stories are good, simple entertainment.
And here you have media from all over the world is flown in and expected by their home offices all around the world to produce a story every day. I mean, the government could have just issued a press release every day and the media would have read it word for word over the air. That's how, desperate it was.
What the public was seeing and hearing on TV during the siege demonized the people in that church. The ones that I met and knew, the survivors, were people that were basically just trying to get to heaven.
The world can hate us, the world can laugh at us and taunt us all they want. The world took 2,000 years to learn this book, and there's been people all up until now who've been interested in it. Now people don't want the Bible anymore. People don't seem to want to read the Bible, or, they want to go to church and just be saved, And that's great if that's how faith works, but if God has a will, and it is written in that book, the Spirit's written in the book through all the prophets, then there's a knowledge He wants us to know. And the knowledge is here and it's being revealed, and that's all I can say.
By March 24th, 25 children under the age of 15 and approximately 54 adults remain inside the church compound as Steve Schneider negotiates with the FBI.
Let's reflect on this for a minute. Why were they there in the first instance?
A good question.
They were there to serve and execute and arrest and search warrants.
They never said anything, not by a bullhorn, not by a knock at the door, not by any reason. They never said anything, not by a bullhorn, not by a knock at the door, not by any reason. Not by any reason. Even before they got, just about the time they got to the porch, is when David opened the door and poked his head out.
What we want to do and what we will do when the time is right is we will process the crime scene there. You know that. We know that.
That wouldn't be so bad. The biggest issue that I've raised with you, Dick, is not that you would be here even, or that the Texas Rangers, but I'm adamant about this part that the ATF is playing. The ones that came to this place, and when I heard on the press conference the outright lies, and to think that that agency would be involved in any aspect of this from here on out blows my mind that that would even be allowed in America.
Well, Steve, let's face it. There are some things that we will deal with when the time is right.
No. You're not dealing with it now so we can come out. I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons I have not been able to hurdle talking to the people, getting them to come out.
Okay, Steve, why don't you and your family come out and you handle these issues, okay? Why don't we
How am I going to handle them when I'll be shackled for hands and feet and throwing the key I'll be throwing away? Who's going to hear
Steve?
Me? They're after blood. Come on, Dick.
They put me in the jail in Lake O'Hare. After I'd been there a short period of time, they brought me in and a judge came and told me what I was being charged for. And he said, you're being charged for murder, conspiracy to murder. He said, it'll be 100 years, 75, or 50.
They were assuring us that we would be cared for in a professional manner. Then you turn around and you've got people that are flipping you the finger over top of the tanks. They're dropping their drawers and baring their butts. And these are the type of people that you're supposed to go out to.
I said I had heard that you guys had wrote on some of the windows there at Mount Carmel that we see you, David, etc. And I asked the agent, was this true? And he said, yeah, it's true. And I said, aren't you guys concerned about when this is over, if the news media might see this and think it a little antagonistic on your part? He just looked at me and walked away.
Everything flip-flopped from day to day. You went through a feeling of being real hopeful, to you sunk at the bottom again, because from day to day you never really knew what was going to happen, what the negotiations were going to be.
Steve?
Yeah.
There's been a change. The tactical people have changed the situation, and for security reasons and for safety reasons, no one is now authorized to come out of there for any reason. And what they're telling me is that if anybody does, they are going to be dealt with in such a fashion that the people will have to retreat back to the compound.
Did you hear that, folks? Did you really hear what was just told to the Branch Davidians? That they couldn't come out for any reason, even if they wanted to. And the implied threat is that they would be shot. When? Oh, God, when will you wake up?
What? I'm missing, I guess, what you're saying. Are you saying, make it as plain as possible?
The patience of the bosses is no longer where it was earlier.
Okay, I'm about ready to listen to me now, Henry. I don't really give about your bosses. When you tell me one thing, or you tell us that is okay, and this Bradley comes up and says something contrary to what you are, you tell your bosses to get their butts together. Do you hear me?
Would you respond to the allegation that the reason why we had a Waco is because the FBI was in disarray?
It is obvious that from the time of the change in administration, it was very clear that there was great discussion about the replacement of the director of the FBI.
In a March 11th letter to President Clinton, Acting Attorney General Stuart Gerson recommends that the president rely on other FBI leadership to resolve Waco and dismiss Director Sessions. Chief among those mentioned in Gerson's letter is Assistant Director Floyd Clark. This situation created a competitive environment for the directorship of the FBI in the midst of a major crisis.
I know this is a very political thing, and I agree with your observation that it could be that the FBI was impaired in its ability. Certainly, I was impaired in my ability.
FBI Director William Sessions attempted to fly to Waco during the siege to conduct face-to-face negotiations with David Koresh, but he was impeded by government officials in Washington, D.C.
The reason Bill Sessions never came to Waco during the siege was that the Justice Department refused to let him board his flight.
Everybody knows that I had contact directly from people associated with Mr. Koresh about the possibility of my going down and negotiating with them, coming in down there. Now, some people played that as ridiculous and ridiculed it, or as grandstanding, but it's indicative of what I felt and continue to feel. You can't discard any possibility that you can resolve that kind of circumstance when you can take and apply that negotiating capability.
The Justice Department wouldn't allow an FBI director to go and negotiate directly with a so-called terrorist who they felt had killed a number of federal agents, more or less in cold blood, and try to defuse a serious situation that ended up in a calamity and a great embarrassment for the FBI and even greater embarrassment for law enforcement in general. And it was all politics.
They were not about to see this standoff in Waco negotiated again because it was an opportunity for Floyd Clark and company to show that they were the FBI capable of handling the standoff and coming out winning in this kind of an incident with military kind of tactics. It was a paramilitary organization.
Maybe you might ask them if you can have some ice cream too, huh?
Can I have some ice cream?
Little bribery there. Now you're considered a big terrorist, you know, and you can demand some important things like an ice cream or something, you know. Maybe they might adhere to you.
By late March, the FBI has cut off electricity to the compound and is preparing a series of military tactics to force a resolution.
A direct quote from the transcript where it is said by a negotiator to Mr. Koresh, "We had a very good dialogue last night. The electricity will not go off tonight because we've had a good dialogue this evening." As a negotiator to Mr. Koresh. A half an hour later, the lights are turned off and left off permanently. The electricity is shut off. Why?
I can't answer the why, but I can tell you that the negotiation team was disappointed in that decision.
Since mid-March, negotiations have begun to fail, and the FBI resorts to psychological warfare.
I appreciate the
music. Yeah.
I
thought you being a teenager, you might like some of those Martian sounds.
My little sister.
Oh, I see.
Went through varying degrees of hell with noise, music, bright lights. The children were suffering along with the adults. We were without water, having had our water tanks shot up. We were living on rainwater. Whenever it would rain, people would put buckets out the window and collect rainwater, and it was rationed. I doubt whether anybody got more than 8 ounces a day, if that.
How long do you sit with that many resources tied up and disrupting a whole community with people that are violating violations of the law, that are in fact in a state of anarchy?
I can remember looking out the south side of the building. My attention had been drawn to the fact that the tanks were coming in, and they were pushing all the things on the south side of the church, on the chapel, south side of the chapel, into a big heap. It looked like they were building a bonfire.
We know from the evidence that the tactical element of the FBI was eager to put a quick end to this standoff. The irony of the situation is that the tactical people are actually precipitating the crises of the 19th.
They're telling me the commanders want more, and I'm telling them they're arresting everything that we were doing, and it's getting 10 times worse, and the more they threaten these people, the more they'll lay down right on the floor and they can run the tanks over them. I mean, that becomes the attitude.
Steve Snyder, in a telephone call during the standoff to his sister Sue, refers to the prophecies in the book of Nahum, chapter 2.
We're talking about the Bible and all the prophecies.
But I know.
Look at, when you get off the phone, you look at the book of Nahum.
Yeah.
The chariots with flaming torches or tanks, that's what Nahum saw in the final days. They're surrounded us. It's the first time in the history of the United States that the government has used tanks against its own people, Sue.
It's stupid, I know it.
Well, I had been talking to the negotiators myself, and I would tell them things that I thought would help. And it seemed like for instance, when they started playing the music, that they would laugh. They acted like they wanted to do everything to antagonize, and they really didn't want to help. And it just seemed like every prediction that David was predicting, they knew about, and they were making these predictions come true. And I kept saying to my family, why are they doing this if they want them to come out?
I am bewildered in the wake of Jonestown why more time wasn't spent, and somebody, not out in the plains of Waco, but maybe in a nice, comfortable office in Washington, didn't immerse themselves in the religious tenets of this Branch Davidian group.
If I knew about his plans to burn the place, we had a whole other approach with him. We know about your plan to burn the place and destroy your people. We would have been broadcasting it. We would not even come close to approaching that place.
Numerous microphones were planted inside of Mount Carmel that recorded several conversations of the Davidians reacting to the tanks and the FBI hostage rescue team.
I mean, if they're going to come inside and storm this place, they're going to be in the wrong. Who's Lewis and Steve that they think they're going to go out there and stop the Assyrian when it's God's will that the Assyrians go out there? They can't destroy us unless it's God's will they do. Haven't you read Joel 2 and Isaiah 13, where it says he's going to take us up like flames of fire? I sure think God.
The FBI cannot get up here and say they did not know that David Koresh would respond when they made that assault. They knew that David Koresh was going to respond by trying to burn the place down, and they knew that because they had overheard undercover tapes and because they had prior negotiation tapes with him.
Things are only going to get worse out there. This whole situation is not going to go away. You know and I know the only way we're going to resolve this situation is you folks come on out. That's the end of it right there. And now we're going to have to work to a point where this is going to happen. Now the trick is how. And a situation like this is, that's the answer.
I'll tell you what, it definitely is an unusual situation for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sometime when you have a chance,
to read Isaiah 33 about people living in fire and walking through it and coming out and surviving, seriously, who can dwell in everlasting burning? That's the question.
There is a tradition in the Branch Davidian history that God would, in the end time, protect his people through a wall of fire. They understand the Bible prophecies to be warnings of what could happen, but not necessarily what must happen. Koresh wrote a letter to his attorney, Dick DeGarry, in which he said he had good news. God had spoken to him. The waiting period was coming to an end. He and all the people could exit Mount Carmel and go to the system. But first, he was commanded to write down the meaning of his message, the meaning of the seven seals. After he wrote that manuscript, he and all the people were commanded to leave. They actually had no choice to remain. God had told them to leave.
This message is communicated to the FBI in an attempt to end the siege. Koresh writes his first seal and is preparing the second when the FBI begins implementing its final tactical resolution.
They'd been knocking down trees and dragging things off from outside Mount Carmel, little by little for several weeks. On the 18th, they got rid of everything that was left.
Just like the pasty during the Dark Ages. When they thought people were heretics, they went in and dealt with them. That was the way they believed. And, you know, we have to all follow our conscience. That's why America is supposed to be a great nation, where we can follow our conscience according to our beliefs.
There was an aura there that we're going to end this thing.
Was inserted using a Mark V delivery system secured to a boom. We would not use dosages that would harm those children.
The FBI's position on this from day one was to be very deliberate, very careful, and not to do anything that would be provocative, that would cause some reaction.
There were no injuries to FBI agents, and FBI agents did not return any fire throughout the entire day, in spite of being fired upon numerous times by occupants of the compound.
For this to continue for 48 hours, but there was a catch to the plan. If the tanks took fire from the Davidians, they were then allowed to escalate the plan.
According to the official briefing given to Attorney General Janet Reno by the FBI on April the 12th, the assault plan called for demolition of the building and permission to shoot streams of automatic weapons fire into the building to support an armored vehicle's approach.
And we told them what was going to happen. This tank's going to come up. It's going to insert gas. We are not entering the compound. We're not fulfilling this prophecy. Don't presume that.
Was the Attorney General warned that while we've been very cautious about selecting what your experts say, or experts say was non-lethal gas, we might still crush sections of the building? Did she understand that people might be killed? I find an inconsistency between the efforts of the gas insertion plan to save life and the actions of this tank.
At Mount Carmel, you had people that were confined
to an area, where were they going to go? Who were they going to hurt?
They ran out of gas canisters, I think about 10 o'clock in the morning. Everything they'd planned for 48 hours was gone by then, and they were flying in more from Houston.
The CS gas used at Mount Carmel was more potent than normal tear gas. CS gas would induce nausea, vomiting, and disorientation. As the FBI tanks demolished the building, the gas was dispersed from high-pressure bottles mounted on the boom of the combat engineering vehicles.
Any indication about danger or harm to those children, the rule was back off.
One of the first locations gassed by the FBI is the buried school bus, the entryway to an underground storm shelter. Following the gassing, the mothers of the children take them to an enclosed concrete vault, which the FBI calls the bunker. The FBI gasses the bunker for 2 hours.
Approximately half of a panel that we had testified that some of the infants and children, since they didn't have gas masks, could in fact have died from inhalation or effects of CS gas. At the very least, a Department of Justice decision in fact resulted in the babies and children being tortured for at least 3 to 4 hours.
I'd been told that earlier in the morning, the filters wouldn't last long. When it did block up, I'd taken my mask off only to find my face burning and stinging. It was like you had acid all over you. Some of them were trying to wipe it off with minimal amounts of their drinking water on them, perhaps a rag or whatever, only to find that it made it worse. So as I say, what the children were going through, only God knows.
I saw grown men, adults crying because of the sensation of the gas. As I say, we were fortunate in as much as we were not in a enclosed environment like the children were, being sprayed point blank and not having any ventilation.
We are now at what we believe is the next logical juncture of putting sufficient pressure on them to cause them to come out.
We saw a hole that a tank had made in the south wall of the chapel, and we were kind of standing right just inside of that. There was a heap of rubble, sheetrock, and tubercores that the tank had pushed in. We were standing just a little back from the hole, trying to decide whether if we went out we would be shot, and as we were standing there, others were kind of coming in behind us. Next thing I knew, I kind of turned, was looking out the hole again, and all this smoke came down the outside of the building and got sucked in the hole where we were, and the whole place turned pitch black. That was the first indication that I recall of any evidence of fire.
Statement by you that they committed suicide because we never got to talk to them is all a conclusion that you've drawn, and as you just said, speculation on your part.
I'm trying to resolve in my mind why someone would sit in there for 6 hours with gas and not come out with a full opportunity to come out.
Well,
who was keeping them from doing it? Are they compelling themselves or what? I don't know. It has to be speculation.
I think that's the point, is we don't know.
So black you couldn't even see the flame. You could just feel the heat, oppressive heat that pushed you down on the ground. And I can remember looking at my hands, and the skin was just rolling off. There was no blister. They were just rolling off in whole layers, you might say. And I looked back over my shoulder, and I was just horrified at the fact that I'd just come through a massive flame.
Heard some people screaming, kind of high-pitched screams. It didn't sound anyone was like a scream of fear. It sounded like more of a scream that someone was getting burned.
Mm-hmm.
were hoping that the women in that compound would grab their children and flee out. That did not occur. Unfortunately, they bunkered down the children the best we can tell, and they allowed those children to go up in flames with them.
David Koresh, Steve Schneider, 52 other adults, 25 children, and two trauma-born infants perished in the April 19th fire. The Davidian survivors were taken into custody by FBI agents on the scene. Clive Doyle and other injured French Davidians were given emergency treatment at the FBI command post. The uninjured Davidians were transferred to the custody of the ATF and booked into the county jail.
The reason we didn't wait was the thing I've tried to say several times, I'm not saying it but well enough, is that from his actions on the 19th, when he had some of those people killed by gunfire, others died in the fire for not being able to leave, which I think they were concerned about, most of them, of their salvation. That was his hold over them, is that he would dictate when that occurred.
Many people would argue your actions. How do you respond to their families?
It's not because of our actions. Those children are dead because David Koresh had them killed. There's no question about that. He had those fires started. He had 51 days to release those children. He chose those children to die.
I don't know who started the fire or fires. I don't know who fired bullets into these people's bodies. I don't know from what origin the bullets came from. So if we could completely agree that we do not have a definitive answer of the sourcing, then in fact what we have is an open homicide.
Anything that we've missed that we should go after in the remaining 2 days?
Yes, sir. I think we've missed some of the questions as to, as I mentioned earlier, why items of evidence have disappeared, why the crime scene was destroyed before it could be evaluated. These areas, especially the evidence disappearing.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door.
Hey, honey.
Something's not right. Throw out your arms. Let me spend my last day. We're here from the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, say it as a fact.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. Now produce that and do what you're told.
You've been listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Don't miss part two tomorrow night. William Cooper called me the most dangerous radio host in America. And now you know why.
Engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land. And put his thing, hit the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar, right? Satan's preparing it for another huge, packed hike. Portal. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rakes the nation. Order out. Crisis creation. Incite black and white, program agitation.
Folks, I just want to let you know that the feds in the valley have been stepping up their reconnaissance of the area up here. They've been here pretty regularly for the last 3 weeks. They were here yesterday. They were here today. They appear to either be meeting down by the shopping center where Ted Boson, or Todd Boson, and the cable company have their offices. They may even have a cover office there. And this evening, they met at the firehouse in Eagle. So, they don't know it, but they're not undercover like they think they are. They are followed. Their movements are monitored. We know every single thing they do. Every time they enter this valley. But I want to let you know that, because if anything happens during the night, any night, I will not ever commit suicide. If anything happens to me, I was murdered. Don't you ever forget it. According to William Jefferson Clinton, I'm the number one enemy of the communist administration in Washington, D.C.
Masonic religion, it's a liar. Got you praying for a Luciferian Messiah.